Hi, and welcome to the Untangling Toys podcast. I'm your host, Lego Master Model Builder, Sam Saxeri. Untangling Toys is a show about all things toys and play. And even though this is episode 5, I realize we haven't talked much about the definition of play. What is play? How do you define play? Play is this really big, instinctual, universal thing. So most definitions of play are probably going to fall short. However, if we're going to study play, we're going to try to define it. And I think one approach is to think about play and learning play similar to language. You can learn a language more easily by immersing yourself in it than by studying the grammar and the vocabulary and all that. Kids learn their first language just by hearing words, repeating it, trying out sounds, and seeing what happens when they make a certain sound in a certain order. And then before you know it, they've gone from making cute little goo-goo baba sounds to whole sentences. They grow up so fast. Just like if you want to study a language in depth, if we want to study play in depth, we're going to need to, you know, break it down into individual sentences, words, that way we can study it bit by bit. By working on definitions, we're not exactly trying to say this is all of everything that encompasses play, or this is play and this is not play. We're really just focusing in on one aspect at a time, see what's going on with it, and then see what happens when you put it back into the whole. Like if we were learning individual words, we wouldn't just want to have individual standalone words, we want to use them in whole sentences. So I've been reading this book, Play, How It Shapes the Brain, Opens the Imagination, and Invigorates the Soul by Stuart Brown, MD, who is the founder of the National Institute for Play. It's been a really fun read so far, so if you want to learn more about play, I highly recommend this book. In the early chapters, Stuart Brown also struggles to define play, and what he does is he gives seven properties. He gives seven properties of play. So before we get into today's toy, I want to look a little more in-depth at those seven properties of play. Property one of Stuart Brown's seven properties of play is apparently purposelessness, done for its own sake. Play is done for its own sake, purposeless. That might sound a little negative or unproductive, and it is, but in a good way. A lot of parents would ask me, how can their kid get better at building with Legos? Because working with Lego, being good at designing things, will then translate to other careers in life, like becoming an architect or an engineer, or you know, anything that needs good design skills, good spatial reasoning skills, good math skills. And while I think you can get all of that out of Lego, I never really thought that Lego should be this Trojan horse for education. It can be. It absolutely can be. Being good at design, spatial reasoning, math, those are all things that can come along if you play with Lego a lot. But the end goal, why did you pick up those bricks to build a building in the first place? I think that should be a little more frivolous, a little more silly, a little more purposeless. For example, in high school, I wanted to build a slap-a-phone, which if you don't know what that is, it's that tube instrument that the Blue Men Group play. It's a whole bunch of like PVC tubes and they whack them with little mallets and it makes like a bow, bow, bow sound. And I wanted to make one of those and I thought, okay. So I went to the hardware store. I got a whole bunch of PVC pipes and fittings and elbow pieces. And I thought all I would have to do is cut out certain lengths and then put them into a frame. And then I would have a slap-a-phone or a telephone. Not a telephone. Tubulum. But then I started reading up on how to actually cut these to length to make the right notes, especially the lower notes. These pipes had to be very long and then have certain bends in them in order to fit in a smaller space. And that started to involve more and more complicated math and physics and music theory. I got really into that. All the formulas to decide, you know, if there's a bend, how big it's going to be. If I use a tube that's a certain diameter, that's going to be a different length than if I use a wider tube. The point is, it ended up taking a lot of math. My objective was not to learn all that math. It was to make a bunch of silly sounds. It was done for its own sake. The sake that I was really into experimental percussion sounds. And I still am. So many times things that, especially for adults, but I think it's creeping into kids' play as well. When you say, all right, I'm going to go do some recreation. I also need to meter it. I need to be able to say I did it for this many hours and I got this much results out of it. I was at this level before and I came out at that level afterwards. I'm not saying play is exclusive to that. I just think we tend to feel like if we don't have that score to show for it, then we shouldn't do it. And play is very much something that doesn't need to have an objective. And that is because property number two of play should be voluntary. Lego can teach you math engineering skills. Play can be a very good teacher. But just because play can be a teacher doesn't mean you can force people to learn things and say, well, you're also playing. Sorry there, had to relocate because the sun moved. So I had to move all my lights and bounces around. Oh yeah, for those of you who are just listening to this podcast, there is also a video element to it. It's the same thing, except you can see me. You can see what I'm doing right now. What could I be doing? You can only imagine, those of you listening. But those of you watching, you are probably not that impressed. Anyway, I've been trying to use natural light because I like natural light. I think natural light looks really good on toys, especially Lego, but also natural light moves. So play can be an amazing teacher. You can learn a lot about math and science and engineering and spatial reasoning playing with Lego. But just because it's a good teaching tool doesn't mean you're playing. It's a thin line, but I knew a lot of kids who were forced to play cello or violin or, you know, do youth orchestra for years and years and years. And then as soon as they could, they dropped the instrument and never touched it again. Even if they could play beautifully because they didn't really like doing it, as soon as they didn't have to, they stopped. And you know, other kids, they really love playing music. They really love doing math. They really love writing, painting, sports. So for them, when they get an assignment that overlaps with their play, then it's like, oh, well, this is play for them. They'll just really take off with it or do something unexpected. And that's because property three, play has an inherent attraction to whoever's doing it. They do it voluntarily because they're drawn to it. You couldn't stop them from doing it if you tried. It's very individual what people are drawn to. We've been kind of using this metaphor of language, but now we're going to switch over to a metaphor of taste and play. Just like with foods, there are foods that appeal to a lot of people. Not everybody likes 100% cacao chocolate, but pretty much everybody likes milk chocolate, right? You expose everybody to the broad spectrum of things, the people who have an inherent interest will start to dig a little deeper and go deeper and deeper. And it's when you get people who are really into dark chocolate and just eat cacao beans. It's, you know, this is, for those of you just listening, this is a jar of cacao beans from Vietnam. Very bitter, but good. I don't think you could put these out at a party and these would be the first things to go. But if you did put these out on a spread and somebody came across it, I think a few people might be really interested. People's inherent interests can start broad and get much more specific, funnel down. And then, you know, that's when you got really enthusiastic hobbyists. My grandpa used to go to model engine shows. And this is where people like him who restored these vintage engines that used to run, you know, textile mills in the 1800s. They'd get them all up nice looking and they'd run them in a big open field doing absolutely nothing. These things weren't running anything, far less efficient than modern day machines, but they liked them, they restored them, and they hung out with other guys who did the same. That was their inherent interest. A very specific interest, but those people who share those niche interests, they really, you know, they get along really well. They found their people. By studying play, you know, maybe we'll start up here at the broad area, and when something catches your attention, you can go, you know, level down, get more specific into what interests you. For those of you just trying to get back into playing, don't feel like you gotta be, you know, you don't have to be at that super hardcore enthusiast level. Cast a wide net and see what appeals to you. I think you can see that in children's toys as they grow. They start out pretty broad, you know, big shapes, big blocks, bold colors, and then they get more and more nuanced. Property number four of play is freedom from time, which is the total opposite of boredom. Boredom is when you got nothing to do and time just won't go by at all. We got these amazing brains and imaginations, and when there's nothing for them to do, it's like a race car stuck at a red light, and it's like, I just want to go, but I can't. But when we are playing, bam, that's green light. You just take off, and you're not paying attention to the speedometer, the timer, or anything, just going. I don't know if this is just because I'm an adult, but a lot of times when I'm doing anything, I'm always worried about time. Do I have enough time to do this? But in play, I'm not thinking about time, possibly to a fault. I'm just thinking about the actions I'm doing and what's the next action that's going to be in this whole sequence of events to do the thing that I'm having fun doing. When you're really engaged in play, all of the actions that go into it, they're you know, it's all the puzzle pieces coming together, but the clock's never one of those things. And when you get into this state, that's where you get into property number five, which is a diminished sense of self. And when I first read this, I thought, oh yeah, of course, when you're playing, you're less self-conscious of yourself. So, you know, if you're an adult and you know, you're going to play I'm a Dragon, you can, you know, go bound about the yard screaming and roaring like a dragon and not worry about what other people think of you. A diminished self of sense is kind of like that, but it's a little bit more. Like, that's a result. This is a direct quote from the book here. In imaginative play, we can even be a different self. We are fully in the moment, in the zone. We are experiencing what psychologist, I have trouble pronouncing this name, Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi calls flow. You've probably heard of the state of flow, right? I definitely want to talk more about how play and flow are related, how play leads to flow. That's something I've been looking into, and I was really excited when it came up in this book. It's kind of like not having your normal consciousness be in charge for a bit while you're playing. I might not be using the right words there to describe consciousness and self. What I'm trying to say is that we create a sense of identity or consciousness that we put on for the rest of the world. And that's a choice that our person makes based on things we've experienced, what people expect from us, mistakes we've made, embarrassing things we've gone through, fears, successes, and our own unique interests. We use all that to put on this standard wardrobe of what we think our self is. This diminished sense of self, we don't have to wear that normal identity that we put on, that normal identity wardrobe, and we can put on other things and see what happens when we do that. It's still us underneath it, just like it's still us underneath what, you know, like our normal sense of self, but we're allowed to explore more of the what ifs. You know, what if I was a pirate? I'd still be me, but you know, what would I act like as a pirate up on the high seas? What would I be like as a pirate? Probably really into astronomy and fish. So by giving up our normal sense of self, we can explore all these other selves, all these other what ifs. Doing all that what if thinking, that's playing all of a sudden. So the more we stop thinking about the way we would normally act in a situation and give up a certain amount of self-judgment, self-consciousness, then we can get into the flow. And when you've gone into property number 5, diminished sense of self, I think what naturally comes out of that is property number 6, which is improvisational potential. When we've stopped using that standard consciousness of how we should act, that's when other ideas start to emerge to fill that in. In improv theater, one of the things they teach you over and over again is to try to not be in your head. And that's sort of like try to diminish your sense of self. Don't think. That's because thinking is very adult, very planned. It's something we learn rather than to go on instinct, is to think things out all the way through, think about what people expect, think about what shouldn't be done. It sounds responsible, but it's also it's very much in your head. Trying to get out of your head, trying to make room for these other selves in you to act improvisationally, it's not like you're trying to not think. You're just trying to stop thinking about thinking. This is kind of why it's hard to define play. Oftentimes it's very instinctual. If we go back to our language example, the first few properties of play that we talked about, you know, that's just like learning basic things. Hello, how are you? Now we're sort of into more complicated things, like trying to explain the nuances of metaphor and poetry. It's way more advanced. It's harder to dissect, but it's also a little more instinctual and it's more beautiful to watch. Wouldn't you rather hear somebody recite a poem, even in a language you couldn't understand? There's a beauty to it, to play, to fun. And that beauty is a real draw. And that leads us to the 7th and final property, which is continuation desire. If you've ever played Rocket Ship with little kids, where, you know, they come up to you and you lift them up, and then you put them back down. What do they want to do immediately after that? Do it again. Do it again. You're just like, purr, purr. You're just doing that all day. And then all the other kids line up. Even kids you don't know, they line up and you're, purr, purr. You're going to get such a workout once you get Rocket Ship going. And that's because play is attractive and rewarding in itself. You keep doing it. You keep doing it. You build a tower, you knock it over. You build it again, you knock it over again. There's not like, oh, good, I finished play. Now I'm satisfied. Now it's done. Play is something we want to do again and again and again because of all the things we were just talking about, all the properties of play. The apparent purposelessness of it, something that we voluntarily do because we're inherently attracted to doing with it. It's a freedom from time. It's a diminished sense of self. It's improvisational. And that's very attractive. And that's very fun. It's very fun in and of itself. And so, of course, we'd want to do it over and over again. It's probably why kids throw such a fit when they tell them playtime's over. It's so good. Playtime is so complete, and that's why it doesn't matter what you're playing, what toy you're playing, what game you're playing. Once you're playing, it's all done. It's all achieved the goal. Or as Stuart Brown says in his book, play is its own reward, its own reason for being. So that's a pretty good analysis of play. I'm going to keep that in mind as we go further, thinking about how all the toys that we review reflect those 7 properties of play. But what do you think? Anything on that list of 7 properties of play stand out to you? Or do you have a different definition of play? Let me know by leaving a comment or a note or a message wherever you are listening to this. Or you can email us directly at untanglingtoys@gmail.com. That's also a good place to send any questions you have about toys or play or suggestions for future episodes of this show. And if you are enjoying this show, Please, it helps the show a lot if you like, rate, subscribe, all that stuff. This is still a new show, and all of those ratings and metrics, they really help us out as we're getting started. We're going to take a little break, and when we get back, we're going to talk more about today's toy. When we get back, I'm going to put together what I just broke, which is today's toy. We're going to talk more about today's toy, which is Magnetiles. Of course, that would knock something over. All right, we'll see you soon. Okay, welcome back from the break, everybody. We are, this is Untangling Toys, and today we are looking at Magnetiles. For those of you just listening to this podcast, I'm holding up, I just dropped a whole bunch of these Magnetiles. They're basically squares. Just about 3 inches, just a little bit under 3 inch by 3 inch squares clear. And they come in all sorts of different colors. And along the edges there are magnets, which let them stick together, and hence the name Magnetiles. Actually, this is a weird angle to be showing you what I'm doing. I've tried some different angles for the video on this show. The train episode, I tried to do it on the floor. That was fun, but weird. We're still figuring this out, but I think I want to move the camera. Come with me. Here we go. Oh, we're in the air now. All right, let me see. There we go. And yeah. I like that. That's better. For those of you just listening, I have moved the camera, so now it's just looking straight up and down at my workbench. And for those of you watching, don't worry, I'm still here. Hi. I saw this trick on Good Eats. Magnetiles. Probably one of the most popular new toys of this decade. Let's first talk about, where did Magnetiles come from? It was a little hard to find information on where Magnetiles came from, specifically who invented them. What I found was they were created by a Japanese math teacher, and they were originally called, the toy system was originally called Pythagoras, you know, like the Pythagoras, the Greek mathematician. And they were produced in Japan by the People Toy Company. They were imported into the U.S. in 1997 after an American salesman named Rudy M. Valentalo saw the toys in Japan, and he bought the rights and started a company in the U.S. called Valtech Company. Valentalo, Valtech. See, this is the whole history of Magnetiles right there. It says Magnetiles at the top. Underneath it says People Company, which is the company that originally made them in Japan. And then underneath that, really small, it's right above where it says made in China, it says Valtech LLC. And that's kind of a common story you hear a lot when it comes to American toys, especially from the 80s and 90s, is somebody went over to Japan, went to a Japanese toy fair, saw something, and then brought it back. That's how a lot of toys came to America, especially, you know, Transformers, GoBots. So yeah, I'm sorry I couldn't find out exactly who this Japanese math teacher was who first came up with the toy, Pythagoras, but I'll keep looking. What's interesting about Rudy is he was not a toy guy. He was a salesman, but he was primarily doing kitty litter. He was a kitty litter salesman. When he brought back Magnetiles for his kids to play with, they really liked him. So he decided to start a company that sells Magnetiles. He would take his prototypes of these. He would take them to schools. He would let teachers and kids play with them. And then he would come back a week later and pick them up. But apparently they were so popular with students and teachers that they wanted to know, where could they buy their own? So he started a company. Magnetiles, that's where they came from. Sorry, this is kind of like the whole, are all building blocks Lego? No, some are not Lego building blocks. Are all magnetic toy tiles Magnetiles? No, there's a whole bunch of different companies out there. So these ones here are Magnetiles. Another big one is, that is a Picasso tile. There's also Kinectix, Play Mags, Titan, probably a lot more brands than that out there now. And they're all pretty much compatible. The exception to that is this magnet tile toy system. This is Magformers, and these are a different, these are at a different scale. Here's a triangle for a Magformer. Here's a Magnetile. They're still magnets. You can stack them to each other for sure, but they're not in the same ratio and system. A similar toy, but not exactly compatible, and kind of doing their own thing. The quality varies between them. I think most of those brands I just mentioned are pretty darn good quality, but this can also be an expensive toy. A 100-piece Magnetile set will run you about $120. The build quality of these is pretty darn good, especially considering that they have small magnets in them. I would have thought that'd be a real concern for any toy, especially a toy marketed at small children. If this thing broke open, a magnet came out, that could be a choking hazard. I love playing with magnets as a kid, but my parents were always warning me about what could happen if you swallowed a magnet. If it got in you, it could really mess up your insides. I think I used to have a toy that was like little magnetic marbles. A real choking hazard there. The magnet tiles are made out of a food grade ABS plastic. That's what Lego bricks are made out of. ABS plastic, acrylo nitrile butane styrene. I got that. I'm not saying that right. But actually, it's a special kind of ABS. It's MABS. M stands for methyl methacrylate, and that's kind of a variation of ABS plastic that allows it to be transparent. And I'm pretty sure that's what transparent Lego pieces are as well. So in addition to being made out of a food-grade ABS plastic, very similar to Lego, they also have rivets in the corner that give them some extra strength. You see that there? It's got a little bit of chipping right there on the plastic, but that metal rivets right there. And so that just gives this thing extra strength. I think if you are concerned about those little magnets getting out of there, yeah, if you see them starting to crack, maybe take those tiles out of circulation. It's pretty rare. We got a big box here, and the kids have been playing with these for years. Other than scuffing to the surface of the plastic, which is absolutely normal, they hold up really, really well. And the magnets are pretty darn strong. They don't demagnetize. They still all stick together really, really well. Oof. So my safety concerns about this being a toy full of magnets, I'm pretty happy with how well built these are. All right, so how do you play with magnetiles? I'm just realizing that this is a very vertical toy and I'm doing a top-down review of them. Am I gonna have to move the camera again? There we go. All right. I guess we're back to where we started. So how do you play with magnetiles? Well, because there are a bunch of magnets in the edges of them, they just quickly magnetically stick together like that. It's a pretty good magnetic force. It's not like the strongest magnet in the world, but still, that's a pretty good lift there. It's about strong enough to hold it together in a good amount, but also weak enough that it'll come apart really easily. And so that makes this a fantastically fast building toy. Check this out. Let's build a tower just like that. We're just going to do slit. You know, there's not like even like the clicking that would be with Lego because they just magnet together. You know, you can almost throw these. Oh, no. And they can also fall apart really easily. Let's go back. Let's do that again. Turn them together. Walls. Putting up walls real fast. And there we go. Let's put a triangle roof on the top of it. Boop, 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 boop. Boop-de-doop. Ta-da! We made Big Ben. It's definitely quicker than it would have been if I had been making this out of Lego. However, if this was Lego, I could probably pick it up really easily. This, I mean, very gentle with it, and you definitely can't do this with Lego. The standard magnetile is a 3x3 square, but they come in other shapes as well. These are isosceles triangles. Here is, oh gosh, what isn't the geometry of this? This is an acute triangle, and it's bigger than this triangle. Okay. What is this called? If you know what this is, good job. You were paying attention. And then there are right triangles. I think the square, the right triangle, the isosceles triangle, and then the acute triangle. I think these typically make up the majority of the standard building blocks, the standard magnet tiles. And then there are variations to the square tile. We got some over here. This is a square tile with a porthole in it. This one has sort of a square opening inside of it. And this one has a window pattern. This one has a Romanesque arch to it. Double arch. And then there are some more obscure elements to it. This is a very small half circle. These are some big sort of C-shaped pieces. And then there are large base plate pieces. This is a magnetile base plate that's about the size of two magnetiles, like a big rectangle magnetile. I don't have any with me, but there are also larger base plates that would be like four magnetiles. Okay, so that's sort of the overview of what styles of magnetiles are out there. And it's not just that magnetiles are another building toy. It's the ease in which you can build with them. So you probably say that Lego or Duplo here is a pretty easy building system. Kids can build with it right away. All you have to do is stick them together and you're off to building. And that's sort of the great thing about Lego Bricks' clutch power is it holds them together really well. But, you know, a 2-3-year-old could still pull them apart, which makes it really accessible for kids of all ages. Magnetiles, even easier to put together. They pull together like that. I think what this does is it helps kids to understand this balance between ability and frustration when you're playing and creating things. I think that speed and being able to make something really fast is inspiring to kids who otherwise might get frustrated trying to build something that would take them more time, even with Lego bricks. You can quickly put these together into all sorts of different shapes. You don't need to know too much about making a structure to actually start getting those up there, building floors, making big shapes. Because this goes together really, really quickly, I think that inspires kids that, yeah, I can make things and I can make things on my own. I can have ideas in my head, make it reality really, really fast. And if I want to change it up, I can, you know, change it up really fast. I can also experiment, move pieces around. There's no waiting for glue to dry. There's none of that. It's just magnets holding things together. And you can make all kinds of discoveries as you're playing. It's a really fine thing because you want to face situations that are frustrating. But then after a while, you want to make a discovery that, oh, actually, I can do that. Hooray. A lot of kids will try to make something. They want to be creative. But if the medium that they're playing with is already takes a certain level of skill and they want to get in there and it's like, it's just not happening. Then that frustration, it's not at the right level. Accomplishing what they want to do is too high. So the frustration's too high. So they don't learn what their ability is. Lego is definitely one of those toys where they can build things and become frustrated and challenge themselves and then learn what their ability is and then challenge themselves harder and harder and harder. Magnetiles, it's just a lower level of frustration because of how easy it is to assemble the pieces. And disassemble the pieces. Because going back to those 7 properties of play, people want to play. People want to discover things to play. But oftentimes, you know, the level of entry might be too high for what they want to do. If you want to play music, you hear somebody playing this beautiful piece, but you know, the level of entry is really high on that. So the first thing you're going to do is be playing Hot Cross Buns on a recorder. And maybe that's not fun. Young kids who are just getting into building things, or maybe even older kids who are just getting into building things, they're going to quickly discover that they have the ability to make large structures, to build really impressive stuff and see what works and what does not work. I don't know what I'm doing here. Yeah, that's magnetiles. Magnetiles, play. Let's do the 10-point toy review now. 10 questions to see if this is a quality toy or not. Number 1, how easy is it to use? Very easy. Magnetiles might be the second easiest toy to learn how to use after just wooden stacking blocks. This is a really easy toy to get started with and to be having fun with right out of the box. Number 2, can it be used in more ways than just the instructions say? There's actually very few instructions that come with these. I think if you go to the Magnetiles website or the Picasso Tiles website, they'll have some patterns that you can follow. I think primarily kids won't be following instructions while they are building with these. They'll be doing their own thing. Number 3, is it long-lasting and durable? But we talked earlier about how the tiles are made out of a food-grade MABS plastic, especially the ones that have the rivets on there. I think that's a really sturdy toy. These ones have held up to years of play. It would take a really dedicated attempt to break one of these apart. So I don't think that they would break apart generally in the normal way that they are played with. This one over here that we discovered has a little bit of a crack in it. If you do discover that they are starting to crack, just take those tiles out of play. And you know what? You can use this as a refrigerator magnet because it'll stick. It'll stick to a metal surface. Number 4, can it be used with other toys? Yes, absolutely. Being a building toy, you could use this to build buildings and structures for other toys that you play with. Me and my nephews have used these to build ramps for Hot Wheels cars. You can take some of these sloped pieces. Oops. Burp, burp, burp. There we go. You can take some of these sloped pieces here, take a Hot Wheels car, and it will drive down that slope, and that's pretty fun.
Oh, but we've also used it to support other Hot Wheels track, you know, the long orange Hot Wheels track. You just make a tower and then somewhere up there, you know, mount the top of the track and it'll swoop down there as well. These are pretty good for building houses for your other toys. Make a doll house, make a stable, something like that. They're also a pretty good scale. Other way. There we go. If you want to make a house for a Lego person, it's big-ish, but not too big. So yeah, building with Lego and building with Magna tiles, I think it's a good combination. You might have already seen this somewhere on the internet, but if you take a Lego Duplo piece, you can put a Magna tile right in between those studs on there, and it holds on pretty darn well. Whoops. It came out eventually, but pretty firm, and now you have, you know, a little stand for your Magna tiles. I don't think it's causing any damage to the Lego or the Magna tile. The distance between one Magna tile and another Magna tile spanned with a third Magna tile is about 7 Lego Duplo studs, which works. It's an odd number, which is sometimes uncomfortable, but yeah, no, that works. And then if you really want to combine your Lego with Magna tiles, there are also these, which are Lego converter Magna tiles. So it's a Magna tile on the bottom, and then on the top, it's got Lego studs. These ones are made by Picasso Tiles. It's a 9x9 square. Again, an odd number, but a Lego guy can easily fit on there. You can build Lego on top of Magna tiles, and then you can, you can add that to your Magna tile creation. You want to be careful with this because if you're trying to push down on this tile here, yeah, that's going to happen. So, you know, just however you want to approach that. There's also Magna tiles that are Lego studs on the bottom and then magnets on the top. So if you were building something with Lego and you wanted to convert to Magna tiles, you could take one of these pieces, stick it on top. Now you can build Magna tile on top of Lego. Ta-da, look at that. I'm a really big fan of toys that can connect with other toys. Question number 5, is it messy? Yes, but also easy to clean up. Check this out. Put these away. Ooh, just kind of scrunch them together. And now, see, you just sort of wave your hand around. You know, you just grab them up and they all start sticking together again because of the magnets. Ta-da, just like that. We've gathered up a whole building and a whole bunch of other pieces, and now we have a neat stack of Magna tiles ready to be put away. Number 6, is it expensive? Yeah, these are a little bit more expensive. These are a slightly more expensive toy. And I would advise getting the more high quality ones just because, you know, there are magnets in here and kids are going to be playing with them. It's a good idea to get the stronger ones that have, you know, the riveted corners, the higher quality plastic, the higher quality build, and they'll also last longer. This is also a toy where when you get more of them, they can absolutely, you know, they can all combine together. So you could get a cheaper set that has fewer pieces, and then for other birthdays, for other presents, you could add on to that. And as long as the tiles all have the same form factor, you should be able to grow your collection over time. Number 7, will it grow with age and development? This is a toy that's good for really young kids, but it definitely holds up as they grow older. You can see kids as they get into 5th grade, 6th grade, junior high, not wanting to play with these because they seem a little babyish with the bright colors and simple shapes. But considering that you could start super young with these, you could probably get 10 years of childhood play out of Magna tiles. Number 8, is it trendy? Yes, I think Magna tiles are pretty trendy, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. They're very popular with parents looking for toys that don't involve any electronics or screens. As I've been thinking more about this question, you know, a big part of it, is it trendy? It's, well, will the company that makes these be able to reinvent it and keep new products coming out over the years? They could, like with these Lego connectors. I think that's going to be a little tricky for a toy that's kind of this elemental to do. I don't know what they could do next with these. Definitely more shapes. I think one thing that would be fascinating, these are all square edges. Is there a possibility to do something with curves? I don't know.
Maybe that could be the next evolution of magnetiles, magnespheres.
Number 9, is it kinetic or does it require a lot of mobility?
It's definitely a very kinetic toy, but you don't need to be super mobile to play with it. This isn't something that you can really pick up and move around a lot, so you'll be playing in one stationary spot, depending on how big you build. This is something that you do in a small table in front of you like this, or in a small space on the floor in front of you.
Number 10, is it teaching something well?
I think in addition to spatial awareness and shapes, even colors, a little bit of structural engineering, what I really hope this teaches kids, and what I think it does so well, is what we talked about with it being so easy to get going, that kids won't run into that early frustration of, oh, I can't do it at first, which means I can't do it ever. They're going to see that, yes, I can stick pieces together, and that was really cool. I'm a maker. I can make things. And so then when they go on to do something out of cardboard or Lego, they'll already have that belief in their ability to make things. And so hopefully I think that'll set them up to take on harder challenges.
Ooh, speaking of harder challenges, I think we've just finished with this podcast episode.
Still recovering from a cough here.
That is our episode today on magnetiles, and I guess also on Stuart Brown's book Play, at least the beginning of Stuart Brown's book Play and the 7 properties of play. Thanks for watching this episode of Untangling Toys. I really hope you're enjoying the show, learning something about play. Maybe you're just enjoying me learn how to make a podcast. If you are enjoying the show and you hope to see it do well, the best way you can help out is by liking, subscribing, and rating our episodes wherever you listen to or watch this podcast. It would mean a lot to me. It would help out a lot if you could like, review, and rate the show. All those metrics go a long way in making a show successful, especially a new show. And another way to help the show grow is by spreading the word. If you like it, tell your friends about it. Tell them to check it out. And if you have any questions about anything I talked about on this episode or past episodes or suggestions for future episodes, you can leave a comment or you can directly email me at untanglingtoys@gmail.com. And then you can also follow the show on all the social medias. Yeah, that's it. I'm going to go drink some tea with honey, and I'll see you next time for the next episode of Untangling Toys. Bye.
Untangling Toys is a Clamor Audio production distributed by the Cloud 10 Network. Hosted and executive produced by me, Sam Suxiri. Executive produced by Aaron Hilliard. Clamor General Manager Rich Statter. Associate Producer Ethan Aronson. Post-production supervised by Devin Ruskin. Production Assistant Samara Mullick. And special thanks to Sim Sarna and Saiba Krieger at Cloud 10.